Hey everybody, this is Dan Lobby.
This is Mary Kay Cabot.
And Scott Pasco.
And this is another edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We're going to do something that we haven't done for a while. We're going to go on the clock with a number of Browns topics. So we're going to spend about 5 minutes on each topic. I'm going to set the timer on my phone. You're going to hear it go off. When it goes off, we're done talking about it. You're going to think that your iPhone alarm is going off, so I apologize for that, but we're doing it anyway. And what we're going to start with today is we're going to have a little bit of fun with the Browns and the potential opener, playing a bunch of primetime games. So here we go. First topic, ideal opener for the Cleveland Browns. We know that they're going to have a lot of primetime games this year, but when you guys kind of look at the schedule, look at potential opponents, I guess let's start with this. What is your ideal opener for the Browns? Where do you want to be and who do you want it to be against, Mary Kay?
You know what? I think that I would like to see them play an AFC North rival. I think that that would be way more fun for the fans than them playing the Jets or something historic like that. You know, people are talking about the first Monday Night Football game and all that, you know, in this 100-year anniversary. But I think, you know, pick it right up where you left off in the season finale with them losing to the Baltimore Ravens and the Ravens winning the AFC North on that last play by C.J. Mosley. I think that the Browns should try to pick it up right there, flip the script, and get this thing rolling in the other direction.
I'm going to say Browns Steelers in Cleveland on Sunday night of the first week. I think that's what you want to open with. That's the Steelers have been hearing all offseason about how they're declining, and if any team wants to prove that they are still the power, I know they didn't win the division, but you know, the traditional power in the division is the Steelers, and to take the Browns down a notch. So I think there's good rivalry there, obviously the Steelers and the Browns, but just there's so much more adds to that. And I think it's three of the last 5 years they've opened against each other, including the last two. So mm-hmm. I mean, make it three in a row, and this is yep. I think that's the best way to open up.
I like the Browns Ravens idea. That's one that I was going to say. A lot of people have thrown around Browns Patriots on Sunday night, yep. And I don't love that. I kind of want the Browns to open in Cleveland, mm-hmm. And I think that if fans really thought about it, I think they kind of would too, because there's so much hype around this team. And do you really want to just go over to your local bar or sit in your man cave or whatever and watch the Browns opener? No, people want to go to the Muni lot and they want to tailgate and they want to maybe skip out of work early on that Monday or something to watch that Monday night game. So I'd love to see them open in Cleveland, be around that environment. I love the idea of the Ravens. The Jets doesn't do it for me. I feel like that's a rivalry they're kind of trying to create because of the Baker-Sam Darnold thing, but I think you just kind of have to let that develop organically if it's going to. I don't like the idea of maybe forcing that Browns Jets on a Monday night. That doesn't do a lot for me.
No, I mean there's no, you know what I mean? There's no excitement between those two teams right now. I mean, yeah. I think you need to start this thing off with a bang, and it's got to be either, like you said, the Steelers or, like we're saying, the Ravens. I would definitely go that way.
Although I think I'm concerned about, can the Browns fans handle it if they have a primetime game in week one and they have to spend all day kind of just getting into a lather over what this game is going to mean?
Browns fans could definitely handle working themselves up into a lather. That's something we know. And although I will say this, from a competitive standpoint, maybe you do want the Patriots week one. I don't know. They're usually more vulnerable early in the season.
But that's on the
road. You could get him on ring night.
That's on the road.
That's true.
Do you really want Freddie Kitchens?
First game without Gronk.
First game. Yeah. But do you really want them going into Foxborough for their first game against the defending Super Bowl champion Patriots? And Bill Belichick having all that time to prepare for Baker Mayfield and study all that film and try to figure out how to manage him and all of his weapons.
After all the issues or troubles they've had winning that opener for so long, was it 12, 13 years?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. I think beating the Steelers in week one, I think that's how you exercise that demon and kind of put that to rest, you know?
That is kind of, and we're going to get into the AFC North here in a minute, but that is sort of the thing I've been saying, like, I need to see this team beat the Steelers. I think they have a chance to be better than the Steelers, but it's hard for me to sit here in March and be like, yeah, the Browns are better than the Steelers, when they haven't beaten them in forever. I just need to see them beat the Steelers. And it would be good for the fan base, good for the team to kind of come out in week one. And how many times have they opened against the Steelers and it's been just a colossal disappointment? Just last year when they tied the Steelers. it would be good, I think, for the fan base to get to go to First Energy Stadium and see them play the Steelers and Big Ben and, you know, their first game without Antonio Brown and finally get that win. Speaking of teams that always start slow, finally get that win over the Steelers.
Well, I will say this, that Freddie Kitchens at the NFL owners meetings breakfast, he was at a table right next to Bill Belichick, and I kind of pointed over that way, and I'm like, so, you know, how would you feel about facing that guy in the opener? And he was like, you know, the whole time he was like, I'm not afraid of anything, basically, you know, bring it on. That was his philosophy.
Okay, well, our timer is about to go off, so let's go ahead and, you ready? Here it is. There it is. There's our timer. Let's go ahead and get into our second topic, and let's talk about the AFC North, because Mary Kay, you talked to John Harbaugh, and, of course, the head coach of the Ravens, and he admitted that the Browns were, well, tell us exactly what he said. You were right there. You got the quote out of him. Tell us exactly what he said.
Well, you know what? It was kind of cool. It was the end of the breakfast. They give us about 1 hour to sit with each of these coaches. But there are 32 coaches in this room. And you really kind of have to sit with the head coach of the football team that you cover for that whole time. Because how do you know that, you know, at the very end, he's not going to say, oh, Odell's not showing up for day one of the offseason program or whatever. So you really have to sit with your guy. But once Freddie got up, I looked over and John Harbaugh was still sitting there. And so I went over to him, and he was basically pretty much done with his breakfast, and he may have just been kind of chit-chatting with some of his guys a little bit. And so I, you know, whipped out the phone like we have to do these days, and I just asked him, you know, what do you think of the Cleveland Browns now that Odell is here? And he, you know, first of all, he just, you know, he looked a little tiny bit tired or annoyed of, like, you know, hearing about Browns. And I think that that's going to be something that the Browns are going to have to be aware of this year. That the, you know, everybody's going to be gunning for them. Everybody's going to be sick of hearing about this. I think John Harbaugh is already getting a little defensive about, you know, those those great, mighty Cleveland Browns. So he was like, well, I guess, you know, we're just going to have to come up with a defense that can stop them, you know. And then he said, you know, then he went on to say, there's no question that they are the most talented team in the division. But he said, but that's right now. Mm-hmm. And he said, it doesn't, you know, basically he's trying to say the most talented team in the division doesn't necessarily win the division. And there was a little bit of a watch out factor when he talked to me. You can see that video on Cleveland.com. There's a story up with that on there, too. And I think Scott's going to be writing a little bit more about that as we go along.
Yeah, well, I mean, just look to last year. I mean, how many years have the Steelers been the most talented team in the division? Mm-hmm. And last year, even without Le'Veon Bell, they were probably the most talented team in the division, at least offensively. And lo and behold, they didn't even make the playoffs.
So, lost a lot of close games.
Yeah. So, you know, it's this big collective thing, right? It's not just can you beat the Steelers and can you beat the Ravens. It's like the Steelers went to Oakland and lost to the Raiders in a really important moment. And, you know, the Browns lost to the Raiders earlier in the year. You've got to win those games you're supposed to win, which can be difficult when you're a team with a target on your back. So, you know, look, you kind of go through position by position like Scott's going to do, and you can make the case for the Browns at a number of positions now.
And going back to real quick to what you said about, Mary Kay, about what the Browns kind of having a target. It reminds me of when Johnny Manziel was here.
Yep.
Everybody wanted to sack him so they could do the money sign, you know? Yep. It's kind of like a whole team-wide version of that now. You know, everybody is going to want to take down the Browns because that's all. They're the most popular team to talk about in the NFL right now.
Right.
As far as the Browns being the most talented team, I think it's universally accepted that the Browns are better than Bengals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are they better than the Ravens? I mean, everybody's basing it on Mosley going and most of that front seven.
Right.
Weddle replaced Earl Thomas, but still you're losing that. Questions with Lamar Jackson. So they split. I don't know. But the Steelers, I know, like you said, you want to see them beat the Steelers, Dan. The Steelers had 8 Pro Bowlers last year. And I know the Pro Bowl isn't like the end-all, be-all. Every year there's a team that's pretty bad that has like 5 or 6 Pro Bowlers, and you're like, what the heck? But they had 8 Pro Bowlers, and only one of them isn't coming back. You know, and that's Antonio Brown. James Conner was a Pro Bowler. Juju Smith-Schuster was a Pro Bowler. So they re-signed and or extended a couple key players on their offensive line. So you know, T.J. Watt's still there. I don't know. I'm interested to kind of take a dive into seeing how this looks position by position because Harbaugh said that, but, you know, Maybe he wants to throw something out there on the bulletin board so that, you know, more people start going after the Browns.
Well, there was definitely an edge to the way that, you know, that he was saying it. It was basically like, and at another point at the breakfast, he said something like, it's about winning those games, and that's what we plan to do. So, I mean, I think it's really taking up the energy a lot in the AFC North, and I think it's going to be really bring out the best in the Steelers and the Ravens know that everybody is all about the Cleveland Browns right now. I think it's just adding so much to what's going on in this division.
And, you know, Big Ben has been hearing all offseason about how bad of a teammate he is.
and
all of that. And so, you know, if ever there was a year when he was going to come back motivated, this could be it. And the Steelers have a great offensive line. They lost their offensive line coach, but they have a great offensive line. We are out of time. Scott, I'll give you like one extra second here.
I was just going to say everybody's been hearing. He's been hearing about how old he is too.
Yeah.
All right, starting the clock on our next topic. So let's talk about the Browns' talent and how Freddie Kitchens is going to handle it. We've touched on this here and there, but now it's real because all these guys are going to be showing up for the offseason program next week. Odell Beckham should be there. Jarvis Landry's going to be there. Everything's great in spring. Everything goes well in the spring. But at some point, Freddie Kitchens is going to be tested because somebody's not going to be getting the touches they want. The Browns might be on a 3-game losing streak and, you know, things start to turn a little bit here and there. Freddie's biggest test is going to be handling these big personalities. He joked that he's a big personality. He actually kind of is. We saw it last week. He was sort of the star. He made all sorts of media appearances and all of that. But he's kind of the big question mark in all of this. So, Scott, do you kind of have faith that Freddie can step in and handle these guys?
I think so. I think some of the whole big personality thing is overblown, or maybe it's, we think a big personality, but really what we're talking about is a player who maybe is upset about something, and he's got to deal with it. You know, last year he was asked about Baker Mayfield's comments about Hugh, and he kind of stood up for him.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of punted on the social media situation where Baker called Hugh fake, you know, saying he hadn't seen it. Maybe he had, maybe he hadn't. Maybe that's how he's going to deal with that when we ask him questions about that kind of thing, but I think that's really what we're talking about, and the fact that a lot of these big personalities on the team are on offense, I think helps Freddie because that's what he has a bigger handle on. He's more in charge of that side of the ball and has more direct influence on the decisions that are going to happen. So from that standpoint, I think he'll do okay. I think it's kind of interesting, though, how everybody looked at Hugh as being the friendly players coach. And I think, isn't Freddie the same kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious at what point maybe he gets criticized for that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that that sometimes also when you talk about a big personality, like you mentioned, that they're unhappy about things, Jarvis in Miami was unhappy about Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
And Odell in New York was unhappy about Eli. Here, they have Baker Mayfield. Not only do they have each other, but they have a quarterback that can get them the ball anywhere on the field. And as long as you can keep your big personality receivers happy, getting the ball deep, scoring touchdowns, suddenly, you know, they're not disgruntled anymore. And they're very happy people. And you have to keep your diva receivers very happy. And I think they will be. Also, you've got Adam Henry helping out Freddie Kitchens. He doesn't have to do this all by himself. You've got Adam Henry, who has coached these guys since they were pups. Well, actually, tigers. Since they were little tiger cubs at LSU. So he knows all about Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. And those guys will have each other. They'll be pushing each other. They've got Baker. Baker can keep these guys in line. Because Freddie's going to have a lot on his plate this year, okay? He is not just the interim offensive coordinator anymore. He's going to have 27 people in his office every day asking him about things that he doesn't even really know the answer to yet. So he's going to need help. He's going to get it from Adam Henry. He's going to get it from Todd Monken. And then on the other side of the ball, he's going to get it from Steve Wilks, who has been a head coach, and he will know all those things that Freddie Kitchens has on his plate this year, and I think he'll be a tremendous help.
Yeah, and, you know, you bring up the Ryan Tannehill thing. You probably remember last spring, you know, Jarvis made that comment to me about how the Browns had the best quarterbacks he's had in the NFL, and it kind of blew up. And like, oh, how could you say that about Ryan Tannehill? Well, now he's got Baker Mayfield throwing him the ball, and Ryan Tannehill's in Tennessee as a backup. So Jarvis kind of gets vindicated in all of that.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's really going to be about if the team is doing well, mm-hmm. if the team is winning, if the offense is scoring a ton of points and guys are getting the football, they're going to be happy. Winning can cover up a lot of things for, you know, a stretch. Now, at some point, things are going to boil over whether you're winning or not. But as long as Baker is the leader he's supposed to be, and, you know, Freddie's able to kind of keep distributing the ball and keeping guys happy and they're winning, it's going to go great. The test for Freddie's going to come again at some point. Whether it's this year or 2 years from now or 4 years from now, the Browns are going to lose a game they shouldn't lose that's going to hurt their chances to win a division or make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to go on a 3-game losing streak. Or they're going to start the year 1-3 mm-hmm. when they have these Super Bowl expectations. And that's going to be the test for Freddie Kitchens. How does he handle those moments? We haven't seen that yet. We saw him when the Browns went 5-3 and finished with 7 wins. We've got to see him in those adverse times.
And they have, again, in that last 8 games, they did not beat a winning team.
No.
And there are a lot of good teams on this schedule, a lot of good quarterbacks they're going to face.
Oh, you got that shot off right before the buzzer. Go ahead.
One overtime comment. I think a big potential for conflict is the Kareem Hunt-Nick Chubb dynamic and how he handles carries. I think that might be where you get into the personality disgruntled player thing.
Yeah.
Potentially. It may work out, but I think that's something you got to think about halfway through the year.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on. Our last topic, we're going to cover a multitude of things. Changes or non-changes that are coming. So the first change, of course, is the uniforms. I don't know that any of us are really super passionate about the uniforms necessarily. I'm semi-interested in that stuff, but it doesn't really do a lot for me. But the Browns are going to get new uniforms. I kind of advocate for just going back to the ones they had before the year they started 7-4 or whatever. What I'm really thinking about is, Mary Kay, I know you were there, but that big uniform reveal they did when you had Dwayne Bowe up on the stage. I think Taylor Gabriel was up there. I can't
Dante Whitner.
Yeah, yeah, and they put a couple offensive linemen up there, and offensive linemen never look good in uniforms. You can't do that, especially if they're the white uniforms. Dante Whitner. Just don't do that again. Whatever you do with the uniforms, don't rent out the convention center and do a big uniform reveal. Please. I'm sure they will, but like, just don't.
Yeah. Oh, I think they will. I'm pretty sure that's happening. So the time frame here is when we talked to Dee Haslam at the owners' meetings, she has not seen an actual uniform prototype yet, but she has seen the drawings. She says, we think we've gotten it right this time. They've listened to the players. They've listened to fans. The numbers will be, I think, easier to read. The uniforms will still be simple. And I think they'll be a little bit, you know, a throwback to what people have liked in the past. They're very cognizant of what fans want to see and enjoy. And I think they'll fit in with the whole Cleveland Browns tradition.
Yeah, I think the people who complain about the uniforms, I think it's kind of like they're the loudest of the bunch, but I don't. How many people really care about that? I mean, how well does Baker's jersey sell right now? It's pretty good. And Odell's, you know, jerseys are flying off the rack. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think you go back to something simple though. Any sort of like 3D weird looking number is, I think, should be off the table. And you know, like we could see it from the press box. Then yeah, we get a thumbs up
yes.
for how good the number is. But
exactly.
Keep it simple. You know, I think I'd like to see them do something where they bring back some of the old school type throwback jerseys for a week. The Browns have never really done that, you know?
Yeah.
They got the new uniforms and they've kind of stuck with that. They did the Color Rush thing, but they've never gone and showed up with 1979, you know, Browns jerseys. I think fans would probably get a kick out of that.
Yep.
Seeing some of the different eras. But yeah, keep it simple. I never really cared about the Browns name on the side of the pants. A lot of people had a problem with that. I don't know. But
I don't like it.
It's, I don't know, it's...
Now you're coming up with all
like
sorts
it.
Of uniform opinions.
You know what, maybe
you
I do have some.
Have
maybe I do have some hot uniform takes. We're not going to get into that right now. The non-change. Let's talk about training camp. I feel like this sort of got brushed under the rug a little bit because we had stadium things, which we'll get to, and then the uniforms. Training camp is going to stay in Berea. There was some thinking that when the Haslams got involved with the crew and there was going to be a complex built down in Columbus that maybe the Browns would move training camp down to Columbus. That's always sort of been out there since the Haslams bought the team. It's not unique. I mean, listen, the Houston Texans train in West Virginia. The Cowboys train in California. Teams don't normally train at their facility. They usually go elsewhere. You know, there are teams that do like the Browns, but the Browns are going to keep things in Berea for the foreseeable future, which I think is good. I mean, I think it's great for fans, obviously. It's obviously great for us. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like the right thing to do with this football team. It would be weird if they had their training camp, you know, in Columbus or someplace else.
Yeah, you know, they said they made a long-term commitment to Berea, and they feel that this is the best for the fans, this is the best thing for the players, and I agree with that. I mean, it's an opportunity for fans now to come out and watch Odell Beckham Jr. and Baker Mayfield in practice. A lot of these people cannot actually go to a game. You can come out, you can get autographs and things like that. So I definitely think that it's the right thing to do, and I'm glad we're not talking about going to Columbus.
Yeah, when you look at the backlash they got when they talked about that when their team was doing so poorly,
yeah,
to do that now I think would harm things. And plus, they're going to be so popular now, if they're worried about making sure they got that Columbus market, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
No.
You know?
Not and it's not a – I mean, look, Columbus is 2 hours down I-71. You know, I think a lot of people come up from Columbus anyway. Yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to them deciding, hey, you know what, let's just do this in Columbus. Let's get away from Berea for 3 weeks or whatever. I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I think having it in Berea is good for kind of all involved. We're going to add a little – oh, go ahead.
They're going to Indianapolis for 3 days too.
Yes. they're bringing back the joint practices, something they did with Tampa. Yes. And, you know, that sort of has been replacing preseason games in a lot of ways. Obviously, there's still the four preseason games, but I think coaches tend to prefer that. 2 minutes here because there's one other thing to talk about. And, like, there's not a lot of meat on this bone for us necessarily, but the Haslams did also commit to keeping the stadium on the lake. There was some talk that maybe there would be a complex of sorts, but where you'd have the stadium and then development around it, maybe downtown or something like mm-hmm. that. But it sounds like it's going to stay at the lake for again, the foreseeable future. And they're going to try and make some changes there and develop around that. So, you know, again, that seems like a good thing. I always hate the idea of building new stadiums in this day and age, especially when it comes to public money. So, you know, do what you can with that stadium. Maybe make that finally the thing that helps develop the lakefront, although we've been saying that forever and ever. But I think that's probably a good thing, too.
Well, I think they're very serious about developing the lakefront and being part of it. I, in fact, asked Dee, do you guys feel like you can be at the forefront of lakefront development? And they really believe that they can contribute, and they've got the money to do it as well. So I think they'll be part of that. I even asked them about Burke Lakefront Airport. Those two were divided on that. Jimmy wants it to stay where it is because he likes the convenience. It's not too far from where they live. So they were joking around about that a little bit. Dee would like to, you know, see more going on down on the lakefront in that area in terms of the dome. They don't seem to think that fans want it. They don't think it has the Cleveland vibe they're looking for from a football game. Fans seem to want to gut it out and deal with the elements. But I think that's something that they will explore as they go forward.
Yeah, it's weird to have the most popular sports franchise in the city this long walk away from everything else.
Yeah.
You know, and it's right. Hopefully they do build it up around there. It's just kind of out there by itself, you know. Right. You drive down to the game in the morning, you just see all these people walking, whereas, you know, with Jacob or Progressive Field, I almost said Jacobs Field, in the queue, everything's kind of right there, and there's just a lot around it, easy to get to, and so I get the idea of wanting to make that better.
Yep.
All right, so that'll do it for our Orange and Brown Talk on the Clock podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, any place you get your podcasts. Leave us some ratings, too, in that Apple Podcasts app. We love to get ratings. Good ratings. Don't leave us the bad ones. Go ahead.
One more thing to add. If anyone would like to get texts from me sent directly to their phone, we have something going on now called Project Text. Mm-hmm. You can find it on Cleveland.com. You can see it at the end of a lot of our stories. You can go on there and you can find the link to that. And we'll put it, can we put it at the end of this podcast too? We can put a blurb about that. Mm-hmm. At the end of this podcast, but if you're interested, it's just little insider opinions, analysis, tidbits of information, and different things as we go along. So sign up and give it a try.
Yeah, Mary Kay's doing it. So is Paul Hoynes, Doug mm-hmm. Maurice, Chris Fedor. So all our beats covered. You can sign up for texts from all of the beat writers. So thanks, everybody, for listening. For Mary Kay and Scott, I'm Dan, and we'll talk to you next time.